Beyoncé has a
yes,
country.
Beyonce,
and you know
of course,
what?
Yes.
And someone said, and good for her. Finally, yeah. I hope she finds some success. Because it's been.
I'm Allison Hagendorf. America, this is the next. Hello, Times Square. Games Aspen. I'm Allison Hagendorf.
I'm the live announcer of the VMAs.
Welcome to Rock This with Allison Hagendorf.
Y'all, this is Allison Hagendorf.
Hello, my fellow music lovers, and welcome to the Allison Hagendorf Show. Hello, my fellow music lovers, and welcome to the Allison Hagendorf Show. This is where we celebrate the universal love of music and the rock and roll spirit that lives in each of us. I'm so glad you're here. We are coming to you from DWP Studios, and I want to give a shout out to our presenting sponsor, Cloudwater, our partners at Sweetgrass Vodka, and our friends at Karma Sauce. These are three quality products I love. They are all part of my life and help make this show possible along with you. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. Today in studio, we have the Black Crowes co-founder and frontman, Chris Robinson. Chris and the Black Crowes hold a very special place in my heart and in my home. So if you follow me on socials, you know that my passions are food, fitness, family, and of course, music. And this story has a little bit of everything, okay? Picture it, November 14th, 2019, it is my birthday. Now, this former New Yorker, of course, has to live on the Sunset Strip right across from the Roxy. I'm going to grab an epic dinner at Dan Tana's, and two of my favorite bands are playing later that night. Inhaler, a new band you need to know, also happens to be Bono's son's band, but that's not why I love them. They're playing the Roxy, and then the Black Crowes are at the Troubadour. It's a perfect night, and you know, the venues are practically like on the same street, so it's not a big deal. However, on this night and on this birthday, I am 9 months pregnant with my son, Cole Hendrix, and I'm about to give birth at any second. In fact, Brian actually packed a bag of mine to keep in my Fender Beetle, and more on the car at another time, but just in case I go into labor from the lab music. And secretly, I hope I do go into labor because one, that's really cool and pretty rock and roll, and two, my hospital, Cedars, is down the street. So we go to the Roxy first. A chair is kindly provided to me, but you know there's absolutely no way I can ever sit during a show. I am belting out every lyric. It's incredible. Inhaler are amazing. If you haven't seen them before, do yourself a favor and go check them out. Incredible show, incredible band. Now on to the Troubadour for the Black Crowes, which is really pushing my luck at this point. I'm pretty exhausted, and the show must go on, though, you know, literally. We get to the Troubadour, ushered up to the balcony. There's a seat waiting for me, and of course I can't take it. Instead, I rock out over the railing. This is something I realized I do at shows. The show is so good. The guys were in rare form, and it truly was a night to remember. Now, fortunately, I did not go into labor that night, but we did get a limited lithograph from this show, which I framed, and I put up in Cole's nursery, which is still there. Now, the lithograph has two cartoon crows smoking blunts and drinking, which is probably not appropriate to hang in your baby's nursery, but you know what? It's rock and roll history. Okay, coming up after this short break, we have Chris Robinson here to talk all things Black Crowes, including the band's first album in 15 years. Stay tuned. I wanted to introduce you to one of my co-stars of the Allison Hagendorf Show. It's the sexy can that's always next to me on set. This is Cloudwater's Daily Defense. Now, they also have their Peace, Love, and Energy, as well as CBD. But what I love about this one is that it has prebiotic fibers for gut health. It's infused with vitamin C, D3, and zinc for immune support, which keeps me feeling good, and I really need it because my little ones at home are always sick from school. And it's just lightly sweetened with organic wildflower honey, so it doesn't have that like funky synthetic aftertaste. I also love this flavor. It is grapefruit, mint, and basil. It is absolutely perfect. Give it a try and let me know what you think. Go to cloudwaterbrands.com and use my promo code Allison30 to get 30% off. And you can also find out where to buy it at a store near you. Cheers. My guest today is the co-founder and frontman of the band The Black Crowes, who have sold over 30 million albums. Their new album, Happiness Bastards, is out now. They are a personal favorite of mine. And to me, this guest is the quintessential rock star. Great vocals, poetic lyrics, timeless style, powerful performance, Chris Robinson.
Thank you very much. That's very, very kind.
You are. You have.
And you know what? I don't want to. Punctual as well.
And punctual.
I mean, we could.
Let's throw in punctual. But your style is always on point.
You know what is funny? I am probably the most punctual person that does what I do.
You probably are.
It's been funny. I've always been that way.
Really?
Even in the midst of like the cocaine blizzard of the 90s.
Still on time.
Yeah, that's funny. Isn't that weird?
That isn't. Actually, it's really more impressive. It's like a superpower.
Well, I can thank Mom and Dad for that. That's very Southern, like, good manners. Kind
right, they instilled that in you.
And I would be on time and not overdose at the interview. So it was fantastic.
Show me your ways. That's amazing. That's amazing. This album, I was telling you when you came in, I have now listened to it many, many times. It's gorgeous.
Thank you.
Like, congrats. It is a beautiful album. It's badass. It's like fierce and sexy and sassy, and it's got all the swagger. I mean, I think it's some of your best work.
Everything sounds egocentric if I agree with that. But it's funny. That's, in a sense, that's a lot of the things that that I find interesting and that Rich finds interesting about rock and roll still.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it's a stretch, but I think, obviously the last couple of years, putting the band, getting us in this place where we're functioning at a high level and everyone's really happy to be here. Yeah. And we, everyone's on the same page. And that sort of sets the stage to be able for Rich and I to do the one thing that we've always done, and that's, write songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in this instance, we wanted a record that felt that way, that sounded that way. We were very focused on a high energy. We were like, we made a lot of different kind of records in 30 years. Which, I think we've always felt was the artist's privilege.
Of course.
More than, and we also did that against the grain,
Well, it's part of your creative journey.
We weren't, and we just, we don't get into this to fit in, mm-hmm. We get into this because we didn't fit in. Like so many artists and so many, music is just seems to be the fertile ground for that, or the one that, of course, I have the closest proximity to, but outsider culture. When we were kids growing up, when my parents made the fatal mistake of moving to the suburbs where the great angst of that is born, rock and roll was like the sonic vandalism of our dreams,
Oh my God.
But we also weren't MTV kids. We weren't, the AOR radio kids. We were, I always say there was, back then in the early days of cable or whatever, the USA Network had some weekend programming on Saturday nights called Night Flight. And Night Flight was, I'm pretty sure that's like the first time I saw Eraserhead, and like they would play The Clash, Rude Boy, that movie.
Wow. Okay.
And there was a show that was very influential to me called New Wave Theater. And it was this really, it actually should just be another podcast about New Wave Theater. But New Wave Theater was like one of those things like, wow, there's all this stuff going on in the world. And New Wave Theater came from Los Angeles with this host, Peter Ivers. And it's the first time, I got to see Circle Jerks, Dead Kennedys, 45 Grave.
So that was really your introduction.
There was something else.
Yeah.
And then, of course, once, I'm the kind of person to see that, then I could start to put together quickly, well, where is this going on? And so instead of going to the big arena rock shows, we're like hiding our like little punk outfits in the bushes and telling Mom and Dad we're going to a party, and then we drive downtown, and it's like unimaginably dangerous. I'm sure if my kids were doing that now, I would be kind of worried. But that is kind of, there's a spark there, and I think in a funny way, and I think because of the Shaker Moneymaker being the catalyst of, the presentation of the last couple of years, that put us in that frame of reference and that kind of focus about, oh, you know, no, we don't, we're not a punk band, but our attitudes have always been like that. Yes. We're not an indie band, but our politics have always been indie rock. And then so to find like the kind of commercial success that we found early was a blessing, but also problematic because of our attitudes. And but, you know, as you know, rock and roll meant a lot, something much different up until the last few years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It seems like, so this album is really like a love letter to rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean, I've said that, and I mean, even though that's maybe a bit cliche, but it truly is, you know, and it's something that, you know, I think the other thing that I think about the record, and that for me, no matter what, well, comes of whatever the future holds for us, like, this was a record that Rich and I just, we just had fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you hear
you
that
can tell.
Too.
Like, you do
and
hear
we're
that.
Like,
you
yeah,
do.
Like this works. Yeah. And I there's this, the second track on the record is called Rats and Clowns.
Yeah.
And it's a very, you know, when you get into it, it's like, we love Ace, early AC. We love AC/DC.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay.
I hear that.
You
yeah.
can hear that on you Shake Your Money Maker,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And then we leave that. We don't revisit that for until now, really. But it was just one, I will always look back at the session and be like, Rich and I just, because he plays the solo on that, and we did it together with Jay, our producer, and we were just laughing and having so much fun, just like, and that's like the best solo, I mean, one of the best
it
solos
is so
Rich
good.
Has ever
that
played.
That solo is insane.
And it's
yes.
like, that's kind of, I think, in a way, a small story, but paints a big picture for where we were.
Absolutely.
For this kind of record.
And let's talk about Jay. I mean, having Jay Joyce as the producer.
Yeah, super producer.
Super producer. I mean, he's been called the most rock and roll, like, country producer, like the hardest rocking
yeah,
country
yeah.
producer. He's done the full gamut. He's so
no,
unique
and, you know,
and
great
special.
Musician.
Yeah.
And, you know, his vocabulary and our vocabulary melded together very well musically. And, you know, we're very lucky, like I said, to be where we are with the team around us. And, you know, I can't say enough about, you know, you have to have all the pieces in place to set the stage for something progressive and something positive. Mm-hmm. So for Rich and I to feel taken care of and not, you know, have to look over our shoulders at all, which is trust.
Yeah, it is trust.
And trust in any relationship is like probably the rarest thing and the thing that
it's
you
the
know,
goal
yeah truly
yeah
and you have to be brave
mm-hmm.
you know and you
and vulnerable
and you can't let the past times that has not worked influence you know where you're going from there so and it's amazing because we you know we had the incredible opportunity to speak to lots of talented people and there was just something about Jay in our initial, you know, conversation, and you know, and I, and then Rich and I also made we had the conversation like, look, if we're going to work with someone like this, we can't, you know, cop the attitude like, well, you know what I mean? And I don't think there was a moment that we didn't feel it just all clicking together, mm-hmm. the mechanics of it. But also in a really subtle and, again, progressive way, Jay is a person that could push Rich and I out of our, I mean, for me as a singer a little bit, there was a couple of things where he's like, well, and I, you know, and I'm like, okay,
yeah.
All right. And I wanted it to be good. And I liked that. And I know that Rich liked that because it's not like it was heavy handed at all. It's just, and Jay works fast. And, you know, my process is way more visceral and chaotic. I like a lot of stimuli. I like a lot of sonic information to just be going on and yes, that, no, yes, that. And then Rich is probably not as kinetic as that. And Jay's kind of the same. So the flow of it was so good. And I mean, we made the record in 2.5 weeks.
That is unbelievable.
Which is pretty
oh my
quick
God.
Pace.
That is quick.
For this day and age.
Wow.
You know? Which is funny because you know, Southern Harmony, I think, for Black Crowes people, is considered like our greatest record. And I would have to agree in some since, but you know, we made that record in 10 days.
Right.
Which was like our little, you know, guerrilla warfare versus the everyone that it was trying to wrangle us in or whatever, that thought they could, you know, because they want, the you know how the business is. Mm-hmm. The business isn't progressive. Business isn't visionary.
No.
You can say that later about people who make lots of money off people who actually do that.
Right.
And I get that there's a talent and a nuance to that as well, but I don't know. I mean, are us versus them? I would hope that people that we dealt with over the years that we would like be like, whatever. You know, I was telling someone the other day, and I've said it before, but I was like, when it came to the way we dealt with the music business part, people would, you know, whether they'd come to the record companies, people in the manage, whatever, anyone who would come and have it, mostly record companies, if they had an opinion or an added, you know, well, I think that, and my point would be, that's great. You can go sell that to the 50 other bands on this
right,
label.
Right, exactly.
And you know what? I'll even give you this. You might be right, but if you're wrong, your mistake is my life.
Yes, exactly.
And
right.
I
yes.
personally, as an artist, I would rather take that chance. I would rather be able to take the responsibility of my fuck up, other than your fuck up, because if I, you know, and you see it
that's
all the time,
rock and roll.
And, yeah,
I mean, that's rock and
well, you
roll.
See it and you read it, or you see it in interviews with bands that were happening. And I mean, come on, I've seen a lot of shit come and go in 35 years. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing in the world isn't big in 2 years, and that you never hear from them again. And then, but you'll hear interviews, and they're like, "Well, I mean, it was." The record company, the record. I'm like,
yeah,
who had told you that they're like that was real, or that those people really cared about you? Were you that blind, or you actually thought that, you know what I mean?
Like, well, regrets are painful enough. So it may as well be choices that you made.
That's my point.
Yeah,
and I can
exactly.
live with that.
Right,
it's
exactly.
easier for me to accept as a human being, and you know, I mean, and again. And it's funny too, as a parent, mm-hmm. we were talking. To,
yeah.
I mean, I'm one of those. I'm sure my parenting style, whatever. I'm sure I'm not the. You know, my kids don't have coffee or T-shirt best dad of the year, whatever. But one thing that I'm not afraid of is adversity, mm-hmm. and I'm not afraid of it for them. I'm not afraid of it for me because adversity is really the one factor that. Molds us, you know what I mean?
Helps you know who you are.
And how we choose to deal with it.
Right. That's
you know
right.
what I mean?
And, yeah.
and hopefully that changes, you know, mm-hmm. and you have different ways to deal with adversity because it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, where you are, we can't escape those things.
Absolutely right. On this album, I have some personal favorite moments. Dirty Cold Sun is a favorite of mine. It is so funky. It is so... It's like all the funk.
I hope I'm not overstepping, but you know who told me recently that's their favorite one?
Who?
Slash.
Okay.
When I was
Slash
like,
and I. Slash and I.
Okay.
Twins. Yeah.
And I was
it's
like.
It's my favorite. It is.
Well, it's a, you know, I love it too. And I think, you know, the other thing about this record is like, that's just a, you know, at this point in life, Rich Robinson. That's a classic Rich Robinson, that when you hear that guitar come in, and then we bring the backbeat in.
I love your vocal on it, though, too.
Well, it's funny because the, you know, the one thing that will never change about the work Rich and I do, a lot of things have changed in our relationship, but in the work that we do, you know, and I've written many songs by myself, different, they don't sound like the Black Crowes, but, and he has too. But, you know, it's whatever, there's some little thing in whatever Rich play, when we sit down and he plays me the riff, that can really immediately dictate, oh, this is melancholy, this is frustration, anger.
Yeah.
And in this case, yeah, that and I was like, oh, this has to be maybe, you know, more not angry, but like darker in that whole idea of like someone's cheating on you with the butcher. And how do you know it's the butcher? Because she has blood streaked across her cheek. You know, and I was like, well,
I love that lyric.
So romantic, you know.
That's a great open. I love this song. Yeah.
So it's funny, like, there's just something about the whatever Rich. The way he makes that riff sound is the catalyst for where I don't think just the imagery that I want, and I write a lot in scenes. I feel like I'm writing, like, to me, that's a scene. Like,
yes,
you could write that out.
I can see it.
Can't cut in the camera, you know, the lover straightening the bed out and then, you know, whatever. So, but that's the way we work. And I mean,
but that's why you guys are so special as a dynamic duo. You really do complement each other. If
you're going to have a songwriting duo,
yeah,
and it's a classic dynamic, and of course, yes, we're family, we're brothers, but you know, you could bring him in right after me, and we're completely different people, on every level. But when we do that, I think that's the good thing. You know what I mean?
That's
because
the magic.
Yeah, and again, we've always been able to do that. It's just, I think for this record, we both, you know, we had a lot of songs, and then it was easy to say, you know, like I said, we wanted like this is a record before you go out Saturday night,
yes,
or you're on the way to go somewhere and you're listening to it. We've made some Sunday morning music, and you know, we've made some Tuesday afternoon music, but this is a Saturday night.
This is a pump-up album. You also have your first collaboration on this album with Lainey Wilson. How cool
is
that? It's awesome.
Amazing, yeah. I guess if you're going to have your first one, go big.
Yes.
But it's cool because it's subtle. You know, it's not one of those country...
Like duets.
Duets where it's all put together.
And
it's like, you know...
It's a Black Crowes song.
Yes, and we're just very lucky
that,
you know, and that just came about because, you know, we're out in the world and we're happily in the music business right now. It was just funny, randomly, when we did the CMT Awards last year, my wife and I get out of the car to do the red carpet thing, and just Lainey just happened to be there, and I knew she was, just because I know about all sorts of things in music. I just keep whether or not I'm listening to country music that much or not, you know what I mean? I'm just like, okay.
You're aware. Yeah.
Yes. And she was so lovely and sweet. And she's like, oh, you know, I grew up in this little town. I'm like, oh, she did. Like 800 people in her hometown or something. And she was just lovely, lovely person, and was like, I love the Black Crowes, and Camille, my wife, and I were like, oh, what a sweetie. And then, you know, Jay makes this her latest record, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, the song's called Wilted Rose.
Yep.
We really like the song. We only have two ballady moments on the record. And he was like, man, Lainey would sound great on this. And we were like, all right. I mean, you know her. You know what I mean? And yeah, so it just worked out to be. And I think it's perfect, like I said. Our voices sound really good together. And we don't make a big to-do over it. And it's just a soulful connection.
It just goes. It really does.
Yeah.
And you know what? Rock and country are so entwined now, maybe more than ever. You know, they have like Dolly Parton and her rock star album and artists like Jelly Roll and Hardy. So it's like this really like.
And you know, I saw
fusion.
That Beyonce has a
country.
And you know what?
Yeah.
And someone said, good for her. Finally, I hope she finds some success because it's been very hard for her in the world of music and media for Beyonce to get something going. So you go, babe.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, rock and roll is country music. But rock and roll is the great, you know, gumbo of all those things.
It is.
And,
it is.
You know, that's always been... You know, the Black Crowes, it's always been our great wellspring. But I do have to say, you know, as the 90s progressed, it was hard watching everyone else my age and my peer group be accepted as something, and we were all, I mean, it's fine. I mean, we've always been weirdos. But because the Roots music was so important in our inspiration.
Yes.
And we didn't really have a prejudice against funk, soul, R&B, rock music, early rock and roll, Jerry Lee Lewis, Chuck Berry, Fats Domino, the Everly Brothers, you know, whatever, Ike and Tina Turner. You know, we allowed those things to be a part of our musical language. And
that's what was true to you.
That was you. But it also separated us.
Mm-hmm.
It also
but
was,
for the better.
Yeah, well, I think, you know what I mean? And it's funny, as, you know, in the year 2024, a lot of those, I don't know, stigma is probably the wrong word, but a lot of those
genre-specific, yes,
they seem to have gone by the wayside.
You're absolutely right.
Especially for younger people. They would never know the rules of the 80s
right,
of and
course.
90s. You
right.
know what I mean?
Like guilty pleasure, stuff like that. Doesn't exist anymore.
Go to a Black
right.
Flag show in a Def Leppard t-shirt.
You know what I mean? And
in
see what
1983.
Happens. Yeah, exactly.
Get back to me on how that worked out for you. You know what I mean? Even have long hair going there,
yeah.
you know what I mean? Or vice versa. You couldn't, like, you know,
yeah.
you couldn't rock the, you know, MDC t-shirt at the, you know, metal show
right,
or whatever. It was funny that way.
The authenticity was hardcore, yeah. yeah.
And that is a funny thing. I like the way it is now.
Yeah.
And it's good for me, too. Like, you know, I've said it a few times, but, like, one thing in particular, like, a couple months ago, we went to see Depeche Mode at the Forum.
Awesome.
And my wife's a huge Depeche Mode fan. And when we first got together, she played Depeche Mode. And I'm like, I had a couple of guilty, you know, Everything Counts was like a song that I really liked. But, and I always knew like that. But then, you know, in the 80s, they were a synth band. And we
yeah,
were like,
I get it.
You know, we wanted guitars.
Roots.
We wanted guitars also to be important. You know, we liked guitar stuff.
Yeah.
But now, Dave Gahan has put on one of the best front men I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Hit after hit. And, like, records that are full of wonderfully crafted mm-hmm. songs in any genre. And, like, and it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. And,
that's
like,
awesome.
You know, subsequently, I've been listening a lot to those records over the last 7 years or whatever, more than...
than you ever have.
Yeah, but I can yeah. put them in a place where, oh, I mean, but I also listen to, you know, I wouldn't listen to them with the same prejudice about the instrumentation that we
yeah.
would have had in the 80s
of course.
As like little dirty rock and rollers.
Well, you had to be like myopic and true.
Well, there were rules, like
there
I said.
There were rules.
Rules.
But now it's like almost the opposite where it's cool to be as unexpected. Do you think now that you've collaborated with Lainey that maybe you would be open to more collaborations or...
Of course.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
What about like revisiting a Jimmy Page, you know, or like just
well,
more...
I mean, yeah.
The great.
Whatever yeah. Jimmy wants, Jimmy gets.
That's
you
exactly
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, yes, Jimmy knows that as well. But I think, you know, I mean, I think
putting
that's...
putting it out there.
Yeah.
Like putting
no,
it
no.
Yeah.
There's a few songs we didn't get to that I would like to play. I mean, that was 20 years ago.
It's wild. Yeah.
But no, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah,
you know
it
what
is.
I mean, I think we're far more open as people for anything that's a good idea or that feels comfortable or not sometimes to get at. I mean, there's certain things, yeah, that I don't think that I would need to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, there's still, I mean, let's be honest, there still has to be something interesting in it for me to be a part of it,
of
other than just the irony of it, or you know, this looks good. You know, the same thing with the record. Like we could have, you know, I think a lot of bands who have the kind of careers that we've had, who haven't made a record in a long time,
yeah.
you might see them chasing something
mm-hmm.
that's not them to kind of get over.
But that's not you guys.
I know we could
what
never do.
Love
oh my! Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Oh my God! We upset our fans enough. Sometimes they've stuck with through a lot of funny stuff with us.
But I think that's what's refreshing, and that's why the fans are so hardcore. Is because you always kept it real.
Well,
you've always kept it true.
You,
to can,
you know, people have always. You just said the word authenticity.
Yeah.
And that's not a word you can throw around.
No.
With, you know. And you know what? Rock and roll and art has always been full of pretentiousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of it.
It is.
You know what I mean? And there are some things that were viewed pretentious at a certain time with certain artists and with subsequent works and the flipping of the calendar proves itself that it's not.
Yeah.
You know, and people can, you know. I think in our case, it was never a question of our authenticity.
Meanwhile, 40 years later.
Next year. The reason I know is because the very first show that we ever played, I mean, we played parties and a few things for, you know, high school things. But the very first time we played, got booked, played in a club, we were paid $50. The guy said, I don't have cash. Can I write you a check? And we were savvy enough even then to go, that doesn't sound right.
No.
Check bounced, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
We played in Chattanooga, Tennessee, at a place called the Nucleus Club. But it was the same day as Live Aid was going on.
Oh, so my God.
There was no one there.
That's why I remember the year. Everybody, yeah.
You know what I mean? And we opened for a band from San Francisco, I believe. They were called Yo. And I still see their they made like
that's
one record.
That's awesome.
I still see their record in the record store occasionally, like in the you know, used record store. But, yeah, everyone watched Live Aid except for us. But I always remember we drove up there. Rich was 15, so he couldn't even drive, which was funny because right after he turned 16, we were just too fucked up to drive. So Rich was always the sober. We always had a designated driver.
Smart.
But some friends came up from Atlanta. Chattanooga's not very far. It's like, what, 90 miles, not even, whatever. But I just, it was one of those things that when, you know, we got on stage to do our little sound check and the PA's kind of crackling. And there was just something really electric about it. And I can still tap Aww. Into what that felt like.
Wow.
And we opened with There She Goes Again by the Velvet Underground. Mm-hmm. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 you know, and we had our little, we wanted to look like we were in the Birds, you know,
mm-hmm.
So we had like our bangs and we would take our pants and, you know, take safety pins to make them like stovepipes. And
that's awesome.
But that was, you know, that's really to me the first day.
Okay.
The first, we're a real band then. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So
$50. By the way, $50 in 1985 was probably worth $50.
Yeah. So 40 years of the band. So Shake Your Moneymaker then is turning 35 next year.
Mm.
What's so crazy to think about is that was your debut album. Like that.
You gotta start somewhere.
That's insane. Like it was four singles, four videos on MTV. I mean, you guys really catapulted. It wasn't like a gradual introduction. Yeah. You were opening for Aerosmith right off the gate, right?
I was 24 years old that summer, and I opened for Steven and Robert Plant.
That's insane.
As the little front man.
So what did that do to you? Like, what is that experience like? I cannot even imagine.
Well, I mean, one thing is that, you know, you dream up a band, you know. That's what I did, you know. And then, you know, bringing Rich along in it is how we did it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like we were saying, culturally, rock and roll meant something very different. And we grew up in a little, you know, like I said, by the time I moved out of the house, you know, I moved out of the house. Well, I was thrown out of the house in 87.
And why were you thrown out?
My dad just was like, he'd said, you want to be Mick Jagger, you can do it somewhere else.
I see.
This is bullshit. You come home at 4 a.m. You know what I mean?
Like, and he didn't think you were going to make it. Like, he just thought that was like grandiose ideas.
You know, he was a singer.
He was a musician. Yeah,
yeah. And I think that there was part of it maybe was safety.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this is pretty gross.
Yeah.
Especially.
Brutal. Yeah.
Not just, you know, the Because I don't think he really knew about the road. And but my dad wasn't, you know, my dad was had a great voice. Really, when he was a folky, had a beautiful finger-picking style and very authentic to what he was interested in. But my dad wasn't a writer. He wasn't a songwriter. My dad wasn't a weirdo in the same way that that we would be, that I would be considered, you know. But it was also in that scene we came around, everyone in our scene got major label deals eventually, or before enough, some of them. It was, but we were all like the reluctant, you know, our mouths were saying, we don't want, we're going to do it. But then our ambitions were saying something else. You know, and I can't say enough about George DeCoulias. Now he won a Grammy for the Barbie soundtrack. I can't get him on the phone. But before he was important in Hollywood, he was a dirtbag like we were. But I can't say enough about George because, you know, he was the one who pushed us. You know, he saw us. He saw us at a place in New York in 1988. So, you know, from the time the summer I move out of my parents to we make Shake Your Moneymaker is 24 months.
That's unbelievable.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
We were really
maybe you needed that push.
We were moving fast. But he's the one who like and I the story is Jealous Again, our first single from the first record, is also a song that Rich and I consider to be our first grown up song. And, you know, we had the okay, we got it. Put it on a little cassette. Send it to New York for George to hear. And he'd get it in the mail and he'd call up and go, oh, it's pretty good, buddy, but maybe get in there again. And we'd be like, fuck, all right. Now we have the middle section. It's pretty good, but man. You know, so he was the one who's like, it's not great until it's great.
That's great.
And work and hard work. And I don't think, again, no matter what pile of shit we ever stepped in or what self destructive things, whatever we did, the hard work, we've always worked hard. Mm-hmm. And songwriting is a craft.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, and I feel it's the thing that really, it's what makes you, you know, before we thought about ourselves as musicians or as a performer, you know what I mean? I mean, when I'm opening for Steven and Robert Plant, I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to be. It's the first time you do anything, you know, and the first time is, it's wonderful, you know what I mean? Because you have all this stuff to see what works.
I mean, you had two of the greatest. Two of the greats. I mean, did that inspire you to help to figure out what your...
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
What your...
Because I knew, obviously, and it's that's a funny thing to bring us around to today, like in terms of being a front man or whatever. There's not a lot of that anymore in the way, the classic way that we considered those people were my heroes too.
Yeah.
And, you know, even to be with Steven, you know, today, you know, he knows that he's a wonderful person, but I love him as a front man. And,
didn't he give you your first harmonica?
He did.
Oh,
he did.
That's awesome.
He did.
That is awesome.
And I reminded him that the other day. He said, what key was it? I was like, I don't fucking remember
so
what
special.
He goes, A. It was A. I was like, okay, if you say so.
Crazy.
I'm sure it wasn't E, you know, but he's funny.
But that's a lot of pressure right out the gate. Like, you know, touring with the greats, being so young, partying.
I can't say too, you know, like Aerosmith, they were in there really hanging on to sobriety.
Right.
And we're just starting and we're fucking, luckily for us, we didn't have enough money to get into drugs yet, but booze and we were just, that was the thing. We knew we wanted to get out there. We had no idea that this is what it would look like. or that you'd have that kind of career.
Yeah.
We just knew that we wanted to get out there and squeeze it for every ounce of juice we could get. And, you know, we're going to Europe, you know, in our band, you know, like, oh my God, you know, well, but it also set up the culture of the Black Crowes. And I have great friendships still from those first experiences. And, you know, and it's funny, being in a touring band, doing it the way we do, it wasn't for everybody, and it's still not. And, you know, that idea, like a Shake Your Moneymaker, 350 shows in 18 months, that kind of shit doesn't happen anymore. You'll never see that culture again, that era.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose your mind, and, you know, and with the success, it would be one thing if we did that and then went, you know, and it did pretty good. And then we had the chance to make another, you know, you see some careers that they can
ebb and flow,
figure out. So we had to figure it out. It was like, you know,
shove
you out of the helicopter right into the, you know, the DMZ, you know, like, but by the way, fantastic.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know what I mean?
Is there anything you would go back and say to yourself?
No.
No. Just you did everything worked out the way it was supposed to work out.
You couldn't have told me anything. My older self couldn't have told me anything anyway.
Right.
And again, the mistakes are made to learn from, not to repeat. The only thing I think that is better now, but I also sometimes have to, you know, find it, is I think it's better that young artists can discuss mental health and depression, and you know, I'm old school person who, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you stronger,
kind of
dumb bullshit, you know.
And addiction, even. I mean, now it's so everyone talks about it.
Yeah. And you know, I just took it all on as part of the fabric of what you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, when your heroes are fucking Keith Richards, and you know what I mean? It's like, I'm sure Keith Richards didn't wake up one day and go, man, I don't feel good. I'm sure, you know what I mean? In my romantic mind, you get on with it. And I'm Southern, we're Southern, and in the South that we come from, the Atlanta that we come from, is a very English construct.
Yeah.
And you don't really, English people don't hug each other, you know. We're huggy, you know, we're not totally that way, but the pressure of it and the frustration and disappointment of things, mostly personal things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the end of the 90s, I don't know if I would say I was a drug addict, but I definitely had reached a certain point where I just really didn't, I was just so disillusioned and heartbroken. You know?
How did you kind of combat this obstacle, this dark time?
I broke up the band.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's funny too.
Yeah.
Because now I have a new set of problems. I've done that twice in the Black Crowes.
Right.
And I get how, you know, I'm sure Rich, I know Rich took it more personally than, but the second time we did it is again, that's the fertile ground for us to be where we are today.
Yeah.
And, you know, very publicly, I was like, I said, you know, I've said nasty things about Rich. And he has said nasty things about me too. But I knew, like, at a certain point, you know, you talk about bands and money. I was like, okay, this... whatever this is, there's no way I'm going to do this one more day unless, and I knew I could blow up the whole scene by mentioning one word, and that was money.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that purposely. And but the best part of it, and you know, Rich went off and did his solo career. I did my solo career. My solo career was very different. Presentation, very different musically, visually, energy, everything. And I needed to take the heat off the kettle. You know, that whistle had been blowing a long time. But without doing that, we couldn't have reached the perspectives that we have
exactly.
now.
Exactly. Sometimes you kind of need to hit rock bottom in a way so you can see or feel.
I mean, for me, it wasn't even that. It was because I didn't stop making music. I just couldn't be a part of the music business.
Right.
I couldn't be a part of whatever the culture around the Black Crowes had turned into. I didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I did.
I had to. So I went off and made all these records and did thousands of shows, but it had nothing to do with the Black Crowes, and
yeah.
we had nothing to do with the music business the way.
Yeah.
And again, I my soul needed to do that, yeah. and my heart needed to
it's
do
important.
That.
It's important.
But in the same way that these are all interconnected, not only do I take the heat off for me, and I can put myself in a creative place without all of that static, but I also found the love of my life after many years of, you know, I'm not afraid to fall in love, but that's a huge part of being able to put your pieces in order as yeah. in order as well, and not be. I don't have to question any of the motivations or
yeah.
any of the. I don't have to read between the lines or understand the subtext to. Have my heart in the place that in my soul that it's been since that part of
yeah.
life too, which is really important for, you know, because you can laugh and be cynical and funny and, you know, a little bit sassy or whatever, but you know, we're all driven to this because of a certain sensitivity, it doesn't matter who you are. Even David Lee Roth,
right.
I'm sure,
right.
is sensitive
right.
somewhere under that weird smile or whatever.
Right.
I don't know why I picked him.
But it's like, it's all like, it was all meant to be, because I feel like Camille probably in your relationship was almost like a catalyst for this current chapter.
Completely.
You and Rich reconnecting.
And you know, when she and I fall in love, we're out in the woods, man. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We're not living like the way the Black Crowes
mm-hmm.
had been and where we are now, which is amazing, too,
yeah.
on a lot of levels, to have more success at this time in your life than you had even when you were very,
right.
in the most commercial
of course.
Parts of, you
it's
know,
the
record. It's
successful in a different way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the record, you know, the record business is different. And back then, record sales was the driving
yes.
factor that would constitute what was successful and not in a commercial way, not in an artistic way.
It seems like you're really in a good place right now. You and Rich.
No, yeah, it's
Camille,
great.
Your kids. How are you feeling right now?
It's good. You know what I mean? I have two. Both of my kids are from other relationships, but they're both on the East Coast, and they, you know.
Ryder's a musician.
Yeah, Ryder's a great
right?
guitar player. And my 14-year-old is a musician. She's
That's
a
I didn't realize
bass
that.
Player.
She
yeah.
is.
She's a very serious and dedicated bass player.
That is incredible.
And so, yeah, Ryder, you know, they're both wonderful, sincere, honest, creative. I couldn't be, you know, and I just love the way my kids interact with the world.
Oh.
I'm very proud of that, you know.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope that they learn from you?
Honesty, and I hope that they learn, again, that adversity is something
yeah.
we can get through.
Yes.
And I know that they've already learned, they know what to order at most restaurants around the world.
And I love that.
They know, like, that. You know, the pursuit.
They share your appreciation of good food.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
I love that. That's great. That's really great. Yeah. That's awesome.
And, you know, it might be a little bougie, but I'm glad that they know, like, that what's important in life are the simple things.
I love that. All right, let's do deep cuts. Okay. Name a song, album, or artist that changed your life.
Just one.
Or you can do a couple.
I mean, there's so many.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a certain trilogy of artists that remain, I don't even know if they come out in the way that you would think, you know, like you would think I would say Otis Redding or Keith or the P-Funk or whatever. But Graham Parsons, mm-hmm. hugely important artists and records and music, from International Submarine Band to Burritos to GP. I just couldn't imagine Alex Chilton and Big Star. And I cherry picked the difficult years of Alex. I always have a great story that we opened for Alex Chilton in the 80s, and when people really didn't think that Mr. Crow's Garden probably were going to be the Black Crowes today. And we played at this, there was a club in Atlanta called the Cotton Club. Everyone played there. We opened for Alex Chilton like on a Monday night. No one came. No one cared. I think it was around Flies on Sherbert, maybe a little after that. But I, you know, we are huge Big Star fans since, you know, the early 80s, when we first heard about Big Star, probably through REM and Let's Active and the DBs and bands like that. And he came in our dressing room and goes, "You guys got a pretty good little band." And we were like, "We do?" You know, like, really?
Oh, my God.
And the other one of those three would be Syd Barrett. And, you know, so Graham, Alex, and Syd are maybe, I don't know if people would put that together, but those are like three artists, and they're the records that they've made that are really integral things for me.
That's awesome. That's an amazing story. Big Star. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, yeah. It was amazing. And I always remember, too, we were like, you know, we got to... And I looked at his, you know, the dressing rooms were the same size. So he had the same little room that we had, but he had like a giant bag of weed in his. I don't think I'd ever seen that much weed yet at one place.
At that point.
And I was like, wow, he has so much weed. Okay. I didn't even smoke weed then. It was funny.
What is a song you wish you wrote?
Oh, dear. Maybe "Ever Fallen in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Fallen in Love With" by the Buzzcocks.
Oh,
it's a great song.
That is a great song. If you weren't a musician, what would you be?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, my plans before I allowed myself to do, to be confident enough or to think that I could do it, I thought I was going to study and go to school or drop out of school, which I did anyway, to be a writer. I thought I would be a writer, a real writer, a novelist.
Yeah.
If I had, maybe if that would be my younger self, my older self, maybe I would, I don't know, maybe I would have gone into some sort of cuisine driven.
I was going to say some culinary. I definitely. Either a food critic or a chef.
Not a critic, maybe a chef.
Restaurateur.
Yeah, something like, I mean, it's a huge, it was always another motivating factor to get out into the world. Mm-hmm. I think being Southern, I had a great understanding of regional identity, and part of Southern identity is the cuisine, which of course is also important because there's so much Africa
and
so much, that's where so many things come together that aren't driven by fear and ignorance. I don't know though.
Do you it's cook?
I do.
You do?
I do.
What's your favorite dish? What's your best dish?
Well, I don't know. I can't say I like to cook. I could cook many things. You know what I mean? I like to cook. I mean, I would like to cook like French, like chicken dishes and like, but they're kind of heavier. So, but I cook all sorts of things. But my wife's thing that she wants me to cook all the time is borscht.
Really? That's Camille's favorite?
Yeah.
You're borscht?
Yeah.
Okay, you heard it here first.
I know. That's amazing. See me on the corner of Fairfax and Santa Monica.
Chris, my borscht. My little borscht. Magic.
My little borscht cart. Yeah. I don't know. We always have people over for borscht night. But,
and who knew?
I know, yeah. I know. And people are always like...
We always have people over for borscht night.
We do.
That's incredible.
There's one of my favorite bands is this band from Atlanta, a punk band called The Black Lips. And they're a great band.
And they like your borscht too?
Well, yeah, yeah. They came and they were like... not all of them, but not the whole band. But Cole and Zumi. Yeah. And Cole's a guitar player. Like, he'll love it. He was like... "This is borscht?" I was like, "Yeah." He was like, "Wow, I never had this before. Can I have more borscht?" I mean, it's like, You just, I don't know. It's just a fun, it's funny.
That's well, I was going to ask, what's something fans might be surprised to learn about you? And skills. I think it's that it's your borscht.
My borscht skills, yeah. Wow. And it's fun. It's funny because we're, my grandfather's people were Polish Jews, so there's an Eastern European connection that maybe is deeper than I imagined before, and it only, I can only really express myself through my borscht.
Oh my God, I'm dying. What is, what's the greatest risk you've ever taken?
I think I'm still taking it, you know what I mean? Yeah. And allowing myself to, never, not allowing myself to stop with my attitudes, you know what I mean?
Yes.
My attitudes about, you know, being an artist, I was always open, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was always, but as a, you know, I don't have white male guilt, but I also, I'm suspicious of the white male in this society. And I think that being able to always push myself to a more progressive and a more open and understanding acceptance of everything around me is probably, I would say, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I would, you know, I just turned 57 in December, and I see people that aren't flexible.
Yep.
And again, I realize I've always been a little bit on the, I'm an outsider, so I've always I've always had, and I've just always had I think a unique perspective on social and cultural things that way.
Right.
Mine aren't.
Empathy.
Yeah. Well, and trying to work harder on that and all my personal relationships and my relationship, my mind is never, I can still my mind. It's not like that, but I rarely don't, you know, I'm not interested in politics because it's the same game. It's always been the same game and it's always the same people. It's like gambling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a, you know, the house rules, man. You know what I mean? And it's a stacked against the gambler. But that, you know, I would, you know, I do it with my art. Do it with, you know, I've tried to do it with all my relationships, you know, and does that mean that it's, you know, it's not perfect, of course. But I don't know if people would know that about me really, because they only get to see the kind
of course.
Smart ass side. How far can you get on being a smart ass?
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you for this new chapter and this new album.
Cheers.
It's really, really, really special.
Yeah, we're happy. Yeah. And again, to me, Happiness Bastards is like a big arrow pointing forward for us. You know, it's like a road sign.
It feels that way.
And it's nice. Really, and it opens up not just for the Black Crowes, but for lots of other things, you know, musically for us. And just, you know, in terms of our expression, and I think, and besides all that bullshit, it's just fucking nice just to rock.
Thank you.
I see
you.
So much stuff that's precious and nice and this and that, and it's cool. But whatever just happened to, you know, like rock, and I like it. And it's there. There's lots of it.
Yes.
It's just not in your face.
This so album is.
We're happy to be just. It seems simple on one end, but rock and roll is important to us.
It
you
is.
Know,
and to us. Thank you, Chris.
Cheers.
Amazing. We'll be right back. So.
Chris is just the coolest. I always feel so grateful to sit here and to hear all about his stories and his journey. It's really just such an inspiration and makes me feel very grateful to be sitting here. Thank you so much for being part of the Alison Hagendorf Show presented by Cloudwater. I want to give a huge thank you to our other partners as well, Danny Wimmer Presents, Sweetgrass Vodka, and Karma Sauce, and most importantly, Thank you. I would love to hear from you. So please like, comment, rate, review, whatever you're feeling, and reach out to me on socials at Ali Hagendorf. I would love to connect with you. Let me know who I should interview next and what made you smile today. Thanks again. I'll see you next time. And remember, you're a rock star.